Welcome to Taboo Topic. I'm your host as usual, Ken Drew. And today's episode is going to be different. Great, but different. What do I mean exactly? Well, in this episode I want to focus on Karl Marx. Yes, this was inspired by the events of the protests in Cuba. Because in order to understand what is happening in Cuba, we have to understand the ideology that has been implemented since Fidel Castro. Originally, I was going to do an interview with someone who experienced the takeover of Fidel Castro of the country. But things fell through. Regardless, I want you, the listeners, to hear the realities of Marxism and why this system always fails. And before I give you the information, I want to start a new segment on Wednesdays called Thinking Out Loud. This segment will be my thoughts on the manner of whatever topic we're discussing, with today being Cuba and Marxism. And before I go any further, we go on break. I do want to remind everyone they could read future newsletters, which for the foreseeable future I'm writing poetry, so if you want to read some poetry, just type in the URL at kenjin296.substack.com. I repeat, kenjin296.substack.com. Spell the word engine, put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you get kenjin, one word, 296.substack.com. You can also follow me on Instagram by typing in kenjin_express, and then last but not least, you can follow me on Facebook just by typing in Taboo Topic. Look for the logo that says Honesty Equals Understanding. And before we go any further, we get the segment started. We're going to go for a short break. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. As usual, I am your host, Ken Drew. And we'll get this segment started, shall we? Thinking Out Loud. Karl Marx. A name and man whose teachings has garnered a revival in the 21st century. A man whose worldview has been tested since the 20th century, beginning with Russia. Eventually, it reached across the globe to the New World. For the Soviet Union of Russia, Hitler's Nazis. Yes, contrary to popular belief, he was a Marxist. To Fidel Castro. I could give you more examples with leaders and countries if you want, including China, how they idolized the man. But in order to truly understand how these countries function, we need to understand his own teachings. I'm actually in agreement with our U.S. General Miley when he says, reading Karl Marx's teaching itself doesn't make you a communist. Or in the context of this episode, Marxist. But if he truly understood his teachings, he'd know the obvious and ugly truth of Marx's worldview. He was a sick man. Karl Marx was a sick man. And the people, the media, sports world, with athletes such as Colin Kaepernick, LeBron James, or an NBA coach such as Popovich, Black Lives Matter, Big Tech, many colleges, and the rest of Western institutions were honest, Trump nor his supporters would have ever been associated with Nazism, given it was rooted in Marxist teachings. Instead, Trump and his voters rejected and rebuked Marxist ideology altogether. Instead, we'd hear pure condemnation of the fall of the Soviet Union that seems to get lost in translation in world history as far as what they did to their people, China, and what they're doing now currently, and then, of course, Cuba, the inspiration for the episode. There wouldn't be a single statue of Karl Marx in the same manner we would not dare to create a statue of Adolf Hitler. Am I comparing Karl Marx to Adolf Hitler? Yes. Where do you think he got his ideas from? Where do you think Fidel Castro and his brother, current dictator of Cuba, based their ideology from that has forced millions of Cubans to risk their lives by the millions? Risk of getting dropped by sandbags from their own government. The ones that claim to be the government of the people. Marxism is about humanity collectively coming together for the betterment of mankind, they say. At least that's the product they sell. And modern Westerners eat the product without reading the ingredients. If we don't start boldly telling the truth of the twisted mind of Karl Marx, America, Europe, and all countries that fought off for generations against Marxism will fall. Because within the ingredients of Marxism is enough to poison a society, killing a nation. Our grandparents and their parents weren't some paranoia generation that was bigoted to new ideas. No. Unlike our generation, not only did they read the ingredients before consuming the product, but they also saw what happened to those who consumed the product. The latest protest from Cuba and the Cuban people demonstrates how this new generation is not buying into the product. Not anymore, at least. A product that has killed over 10,000 of their own people. A product that will never tell the world the truth regarding those numbers. A product that is based on falsehoods. A product where you're risking your life to voice a public opinion that goes against the state. A product that has made poverty a way of life. A product where your ability to worship is highly monitored, so as long as it doesn't threaten the way of life in the Marxist regime. A product where their education is propaganda to hate Western ideals. A product where despite having universal health care, they still can't properly treat their own people. A product where you're just a number to them if you can't contribute to the cause. A product where the loyalists and elite of the state get all the luxuries in life while everyone else is in survival mode. A product 21st century Cubans are ready to throw in the trash like many other countries experimented Karl Marx's beliefs. Instead, they want a product that will give them freedom. Freedom to speech and worship, hope, equal opportunity over equal outcome, and economic prosperity for their island. Imagine. Sounds like the reasons why we declare our independence in the United States from Great Britain. Remember? When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Huh. I bet that's why these Cuban people, these protesters, wave the American flag. As they chant in the streets, translated from Spanish, "Liberty! Freedom! We're not afraid." When the people fear the government, there is tyranny. But when the government fears the people, there is liberty. Thomas Jefferson. This was your Thinking Out Loud for the week. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. As usual, I'm your host, Ken Drew. Before I go any further, let me ask you this question. Did you agree with what I just said? Let me know through the social media platforms that I mentioned earlier. And with that said, let's get into it, shall we? Let's get into this particular set. We're going to be focusing on the aspects of Karl Marx. We'll be focusing on what it is exactly that people are being taught in regards to Marxism. Now, based on my research, this is what I concluded to be, this is what the mainstream education will teach. All right? And we'll start off with this, is that Marxism, remember, Marxism, Karl Marx, is a societal structure theory. What do I mean by that? Well, what I mean is that people, according to this theory, people are strongly shaped by society and its institutions, such as family, church, and education. An individual's internalized society's norms and values. As a result, Karl Marx took a top-to-bottom approach to understand society as a whole. And according to him, all societies are based on class conflict, which are the ruling class, who owns the means of production, and they're the ones that create the wealth in society, and the laborers. Basically, according to his theory and his perspective, they own nothing. It depends on the ruling class to achieve the necessities of life. And when I mean they own nothing, I mean they don't own any land, they don't own their own home. So in other words, middle class, you're considered the ruling class as well. Because there's a lot of middle class folks out there, whether you're lower, middle, like middle, upper middle class, there's a chance you may actually own a house. And according to Karl Marx, you're the ruling class. Now, with that said, this class conflict would ultimately lead to serious exploitation to the working class from the ruling class, thus revolting to create a communist or classless society. So a communist society is a communist regime is a society where there's no such thing as rich, no such thing as middle class, no such thing as poor. Everyone is literally just equal. All right, air quotes, equal, which I'll give you my take on that later on. With that said, this gets into more specific terms, right? So the ruling class, such as people like the middle class and the rich, if you will, who are more likely to own a business, right? The business owners, in particular, they're known as the German word for it as the bourgeoisie, all right? And I hope I pronounced it right, but it's the bourgeoisie, while the workers is the proletariat, all right? And they're the ones that are being exploited by the bourgeoisies because profit is made off the back of the workers. What other ways can they be exploited, according to Karl Marx? Which the first criticisms of capitalism, right? Because essentially capitalism just exploits the workers in his worldview. And one of the ways that the working class can be exploited is that modern work is alienated. In other words, workers are less likely to feel a connection from their job as they'll feel their work isn't adding to society, giving meaning and purpose in their life. And I'll use this as an example. Imagine if your job is simply to push a button and fry patties on a grill at McDonald's. I know because I used to work at McDonald's. And all you had to do, you get 10 frozen patties, place them on top of the stove, the grill, air quote, grill, and then you push, then you bring down the hammer, if you will, that cooks the patty. And then before you actually start the process of cooking, you would basically press a couple buttons and then it would cook within like 2 or 3 minutes, something like that, right? Super easy, and it's efficient in producing the product for the customers in a timely manner. But your ability to do something and to add it into the company or the world around you is limited within the confines of your job description. Thus, you feel alienation. All right, you feel alienated. Alienation, right? So that's the first main criticism in how it could exploit workers in a capitalist society. The second criticism he has is that modern work was insecure. In other words, we're expendable and we're easy to replace. Example, let's go back to McDonald's again. You can go on a strike and demand a raise to the minimum wage. But there's been some instances lately where the franchise replaced all or some of their employees with technology where all you gotta do is press a button. At least and as a result, they save money and it makes it easier for them to be replaced. And according to Karl Marx, we're meant to feel irreplaceable. All right? We're meant to feel like we belong somewhere, a sense of belonging. Which to his credit, he's not wrong in that. We are meant to feel like we belong somewhere. Anyhoot, so that's the second criticism. The third point he made against capitalism is that capitalists get rich, the bourgeoisie, while the workers get paid little. The idea is that the bourgeoisie will shrink the wages for the sake of enlarging their profit and selling the product from the sweat and tears of the laborers in the name of profit. Which, if that's the case, according to Karl Marx, profit is theft. Profit in Marx's world is euphemism for exploitation. And the more appropriate terminology he uses is primitive accumulation. That's what he calls it. Alright, so that's the third main criticism against capitalism. The fourth one is that capitalism is unstable. Economic crisis is a result of having an abundance. As a result of the abundance, people should feel free from work. Unemployment is freedom. The amount of capital produced from companies would be enough to pay for everyone's homes, schools, and hospitals. So thus, the corporations ought to be taxed to redistribute their wealth, if necessary. And that's where the whole idea of wealth redistribution comes in. Where you'll hear a lot of modern liberals, they like to make the point that they want to tax the 1%. Again, air quotes, the 1%. And they want to tax the millionaires, the billionaires, whatnot. And oftentimes they'll say, you know, their money needs to be used to fund for schools and create universal health care. They could pay for, you know, public college education for everyone. And they could, you know, give money to the poor. That's where the whole redistribution of wealth comes from. All right. So that's the fourth main criticism that Karl Marx had with capitalism. The fifth one is that capitalism is just bad for capitalists, which in this sense he was going for materialism. Materialism will lead people to be miserable and make decisions based on their wallets instead of their consciousness. An example he used is marriage. Marx believed marriage was a business contract obligated to stay in an unhealthy marriage for the sake of money. In essence, he wanted the priorities to be about relationships, not money, which again, another point to which I agree. He calls this commodity fetishism. He did not want people to value things that had no financial constraint. With that said, again, just because I agree with him doesn't mean I agree with his criticism of capitalism, which I'll get into as far as my criticism about his entire worldview later on, just a second. Now, he also called capitalism crimogenic. Crimogenic? What the hell does that mean, Ken? Well, I'm glad you asked. Because according to Karl Marx, he felt the laws protecting workers and the public were weak. That it's rarely used to prosecute businesses. And that this would enable the bourgeoisie to exploit the workers and make profits. Now, you could make an argument, there's some truth to this as far as, let's think about the repercussions of Obamacare and how these health insurance companies, pharmaceutical companies, have skyrocketed, inflated the prices to such a degree that your regular person, even the middle class individual, basically unaffordable to get to seek the treatment they need or even see a doctor. That's why you see a lot of people in the emergency room these days as a result of Obamacare, because Obamacare changed the nuances, if you will, to where the doctor and insurance company just wouldn't work together anymore. And so they had to bring the prices up to the point where essentially people would rather go to the emergency room and get their diagnosis to see what's wrong with them than go see a doctor. So with that said, this is a result of competition and individuality. This intertwines with how he felt about being chromogenic, but suggested because of the competitive nature of the bourgeoisie, This corrupts the law enforcement into an ideological function. That way, it justifies the capitalist system in position for exploitation of the working class. And because the ruling class has the money and power, the justice system legislatively can afford better lawyers to get out of trouble. And they can negotiate the justice system. Now, on paper with Karl Marx, he basically wanted a utopian society where there is no private property or inheritance of wealth, steeply graduated income tax, centralized control of banking, communication, or as I call it, censorship power, and transport industries. More or less, the government, the state controls everything, including your speech. But one barrier he mentioned that puts a halt to this revolution needed to achieve utopia. Anyone want to guess what that is? Religion. How, you may ask. Again, I'm glad you're asking these questions, and I'm answering these questions for you. Now, you're probably familiar with this quote of opium of the masses in regards to religion. That's his quote. It came from him. But you probably don't know what that means exactly. Well, according to him, Karl Marx, religion is an ideological apparatus. Meaning this. Religion spreads ideas that justify capitalism, class inequality, and exploitation. Ideas spread of the ruling class. It creates the illusion things are okay when they aren't okay, offering a false sense of security when faced with injustice such as exploitations of the laborers. Passivity is the result of all of this, in part because they're taught it's part of God's plan and God views the poor more virtuous and righteous than the rich, which also creates a false sense of consciousness and twists the working class view of reality, prevents them from seeking change needed to have a revolution. Religion, in the end, is the drug that dulls the pain, alienation, and exploitation. Now, let's keep in mind, real quick, that I don't believe this as a Christian. I'm not agreeing with this. I am just going off of what his worldview says. And keep in mind of his bias, he is an atheist in this case. So keep that in mind. Now, here's what I'll say. This is based on what you'll most likely hear from the mainstream education, modern Western institutions. But when I read all of this, and I did my research, a few things came to mind. Several things came into my head. The first part is that there's a lot of generalizations of how people behave. Very structured generalization. I'll be more particular. It assumes a lot about a particular group, especially in regards to how religion clouds the mind of what's right and wrong, forcing people, or more specifically laborers, to demand change, leading to a revolution. He left out the part how religion can actually bring comfort for everyone, as God doesn't discriminate people based on class. His interpretation of the poor is taken way out of context, too. Poor, though sometimes literal, is for the most part symbolic. Symbolic of the ones who display humility. There's a quote from the Bible that says, God gives grace to the humble and resists the proud. And it's also symbolic how money can inflate someone's ego to the point they become hardened to listen to God's message in whatever circumstance. The root of evil is the love of money. That's where that comes from. And he also failed to realize, Karl Marx, that's also been used to correct injustices in the world. You think the child labor laws just came out of coincidence? Out of the power of just human mind? The human spirit? No. God-fearing women ended the child labor during the industrial age? What about slavery? That was also a result of people realizing that there was no room for such a behavior towards a human being, which, in this context, we have to understand, Karl Marx is living in a predominant Judeo-Christian world. So pretty much, he's talking about Christianity, more or less. Alright? When he's talking about religion. At least, that's a dot that I could connect when he's talking about religion. Alright? If it weren't for Christianity, slavery would have never been abolished. And even today, and even in history in the past, right? Which we can acknowledge that sometimes it's been taken out of context, as in the case with us, because we live in a fallen world, we're sinners. Even today, religion is used to justify a wrong they feel society committed in the eyes of God. Alright? That's the truth. With that said, his theory is very anti-competition, I've noticed. Competition leads to theft. Profit is theft. Which, I get the idolization of competition can be bad, but he vilifies competition altogether. And we'll get into some other things he vilifies as well. But also, I want to touch on another big point that I noticed, right? In that his generalization of the idea that capitalists create a chromogenic society that benefits the ruling class or bourgeoisie. As if anybody in the working class isn't capable of being selfish, greedy, or even materialistic. Which reality, that's pretty much the main generalization of the working class, the proletariat, right? In a capitalist society in this worldview. And that the laws are not discriminated based on class, as there have been examples of multi-billionaires of being held accountable according to the law. And there are laws to prevent corruption. Remember the story of the Wolf of Wall Street? How he made his fortune off ripping off people, the working class, with the use of penny stocks? Or how about after the financial crisis in the late 2000s? Bernie Madoff. Granted, they used their money to get lighter sentences as a result to get better access to lawyers, which, again, I'll give another point to Karl Marx on. But the ruling class, according to Marx's worldview, includes the middle class as well. That means there's an assumption your suburban neighbor would have the same access to those lawyers. Newsflash, they don't. As a matter of fact, if I had to bet who got out of fraud schemes between my $200,000 business owner versus Bernie or Hillary Clinton, who do you think is more likely to get a lighter sentence or even get a sentence to begin with? Do I have to answer that for you? I'll let you go wild with your imagination with that answer. Alright? And you can let me know in the comments of the social media platforms I mentioned earlier. But with that said, let's talk about free will for a second as well. Right? That's another thing I've noticed. It's completely taken out of the equation. It's very deterministic. Which people may not understand what determinism is. And there is a philosophical debate between determinism and free will, which I'm not going to get into that, but I'll just go give you the very basis of surface understanding of determinism and free will. So determinism more or less means everything happens for a reason. Every decision you make is inevitable as a result of causes and effect. It could be as simple as making a decision to have a fruit smoothie for breakfast. Now, you may think you're freely deciding to have that for breakfast, but determinism says outside factors and mental aspects lead you to that choice. In other words, the fact that you were hungry, the fact that you were craving something sugary, the fact that you liked fruit, the fact that you were lethargic and complacent in spirit, if you will, the fact that you liked sugary items to begin with, all lead to this conclusion, this decision, that you're going to have a fruit smoothie for breakfast. It was inevitable you were going to have a fruit smoothie. It was fate. Now, free will, you have all the power. You aren't a robot that makes your own... You aren't a robot, and you make your own music without any factor forcing you to make that art. Now, here's what I'll say about the whole thing as far as determinism and free will. Let's say there's truth to both. Karl Marx also seems to vilify free will with his idea of a utopian society of centralized government control. The beauty of capitalism is free will. And granted, it's also it can also be a bad thing as well, as capitalism is only as good as a moral compass. Alright? That is true. Let's go back to the idea of free will and the beauty aspect of capitalism in this regard. Let's go back to like a couple of his main criticisms towards capitalism. Let's say you do feel undervalued at a company and you want a higher wage. Maybe you do feel disconnected from the job you're doing right now. You're not feeling a sense of purpose in what you're doing. You're not contributing to something greater. Let me ask you this. What's stopping you from moving on and getting a new job? I mean, isn't the fact that you're lacking those needs make it inevitable for you to get a new job or seek a new job? Why does it have to resort to violence and the need to tear everything down? It also vilifies the ruling class altogether as if they have no moral compass, as if it's only limited to the working class. Now, like I said a moment ago, capitalism is only as good as a moral compass, as there's always people trying to take advantage of the, air quote, less aware consumer. But let's not also forget and dismiss the fact that the working class is also capable of lacking a moral compass. Again, just too many generalizations. I could keep poking holes. And to be honest, this worldview, I mean, just going off of this, right? This ideology is driven with a concept or is needing, in order for this worldview to become a reality, is driven from anger, hate, which leads to bitterment and creating violence for the sake of a revolution and have this utopia. Frankly, it explains why he didn't like religion, which again, based on the era he's living, Christianity. Christianity, Judeo-Christianity, teaches the exact opposite. It teaches that all of us are fallen and deserving of judgment, capable of great evil when led by the flesh. But it also teaches we're capable of great good when we're led by the Spirit. Hate is murder. Revenge is for the Lord. We must be forgiven to all those who wronged us. This worldview doesn't fit that. It doesn't. And I'll even say this as well, in regards to how Christianity doesn't really fit into this, and why he was so against Christianity. Another point I want to bring up is this. In this worldview, this ideology, he wants to be God. He wants to play God and suggest that us humans ought to play God as well. We ought to determine who's evil, who's good, etc. Who's deserving of what? I hate to say this. Well, no, I'm actually thankful for this, for my faith in particular, that there's a higher power that holds us accountable. But a society that tries to play God as if there is no higher power can be a very dangerous path. And if this next segment, we'll look into the clues of how this utopia really looks like, and evidence of his bitter, dark, cold world that can only exist if we take God out of society. No Judeo-Christianity, nothing from God's law telling us what's right and wrong, what's justice, what's not justice, forgiveness, none of that in existence as far as who determines it. And according to Karl Marx, we determine it. So we'll look into that, according to him, what that actually looks like. We'll have some clues after this break. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I'm your host, Ken Drew, as usual. And before I go any further, I do want to remind everyone that you can leave a review on this podcast no matter what platform you're listening on. So please leave a review no matter what on the platform you're listening to this podcast from. Let me know what I can improve upon. Hopefully I get a 5-star and I have no work needed to be done. But in reality, I know there's work to be done on my podcast. I've got a long way to go. But I still want to hear your opinion, the good and bad, the ugly, and the fantastic, if you will. But anyways, all right, with that said, if there's any parents out there who have children or a kid, may I suggest you proof hear this segment first. And I say that because there's going to be some quotes that I'm going to read off, and it's going to be hard to hear. It's going to be pretty disturbing, because we're going to use these quotes to kind of get an idea and clue what this godless world looks like according to Karl Marx, and where we play God. And so, if after hearing this, you determine it's not age appropriate for your children or kid, by all means, use your discretion as far as how to let them know it's not their time yet to hear this kind of stuff. With that said, I gotta admit that some of this stuff I'm gonna read off, it's hard to, if you think it's gonna be hard to hear, imagine my position where it's gonna be hard for me to even read some of this. Because the stuff that's being said in some of these quotes is bizarrely twisted. And I could see now why people at this time period did not really take a liking to his ideology or his thoughts. And before I go any further and actually start reading off the quotes, which I'll read off quotes not just from Karl Marx, but also his colleague, Friedrich Engels, which he's the one that helped publish Karl Marx's work after he passed away. Let's keep in mind a few couple things. One, let's look for a pattern with these communist regimes such as the Soviet Union, the Nazi Germany, and all the other communist regimes that have existed ever in the world, including modern-day China. China. I want you to see if you notice a pattern. And in particular with China, as far as like the stories you're hearing these days as far as concentration camps and how they idolized Karl Marx. And yes, that is a foreshadow of what's to come and with these quotes. But this is history that's not being taught and or is being ignored or trying to be rewritten. So people don't know just how twisted this ideology actually is. And as I mentioned in my monologue, you'll learn that the boomer generation, if you will, in the World War II, the greatest generation, there's a reason why they did not take a liking to the idea of communism or Marxism and rebuked it adamantly. With that said, let's get started. So I'm going to read off the quote, and then I'll read off who's it from, which the majority of this is going to be from Karl Marx, but like I said, there's going to be some from Frederick, and I'm just going to say Frederick. I'm not going to say his whole name, but Karl Marx. I'm only going to use Frederick just because I low-key don't think of pronouncing his last name correctly. And with that said, also keep in mind some of these words are more, German-based. So if I butchered the pronunciation, just be cognizant of that some of these words are originally German, and so I'm not going to know how to actually pronounce it because clearly I'm not German. So anyways, let's get started, shall we? Here we go. The classes and the races, too weak to master the new conditions of life, must give way. They must perish in the revolutionary holocaust. Karl Marx, 1856. Karl Marx, 1849, said this: until its complete extermination of loss of national status, this racial trash always becomes the most fanatical barrier there is of counter-revolution, and it remains that. That is because its entire existence is nothing more than a protest against a great historical revolution. The next world war will not only cause a reactionary classes and dynasties, but also entire reactionary peoples to disappear from the earth. And that, too, is progress. To the sentimental phrases about brotherhood, which are being offered here on behalf of the most counter-revolutionary nations of Europe, we reply that hatred of Russians was and still is the primary revolutionary passion among Germans. That, since the revolutionary hatred of Czechs and Croats has been added, and that only by the most determined use of terror against these Slavs peoples can we, jointly with the Poles and Magyars, safeguard the revolution. We know where the enemies of the revolution are concentrated, viz. In Russia and the Slavs regions of Austria. No final phrases, no allusions to an undefined democratic future for these countries, can deter us from treating our enemies as enemies. Slavs' nationality leaves the revolution entirely out of account. Then we too know what we have to do. Frederick, 1849. Let us consider the actual worldly Jew, not the Sabbath Jew, as the Bierer does, but the everyday Jew. Let us not look for the secret of the Jew in his religion, but let us look for the secret of his religion in the real Jew. What is the secular basis of Judaism? Practical need? Self-interest? What is the worldly religion of the Jew? Huckstering. What is his worldly god? Money. Very well then. Emancipation from the huckstering and money, consequently from practical real Jewry, will be the self-emancipation of our time. We recognize in Jewry, therefore, a general present time-oriented anti-social element, an element which through historical development, to which in this harmful respect the Jews have zealously contributed, has been brought to its present high level, at which it must necessarily dissolve itself. In the final analysis of the emancipation of the Jews, the emancipation of mankind from Jewry. Karl Marx on the Jewish question. No exact year. The French Revolution was the rise of democracy. In Europe, democracy is, as I take all forms of government to be, a contradiction in itself and untruth. Nothing but hypocrisy, theology as we Germans call it, at the bottom, political liberty is a sham liberty. the worst possible sort of slavery, the apparent of liberty, and therefore the worst servitude, just so also is political equality for me. Therefore, democracy, as every other form of government, must ultimately break to pieces. Frederick, 1843. Back to Karl Marx on the question of the Jew. Let us consider the word actual worldly Jew, not the Sabbath Jew as the Bureau does, but the everyday Jew. What is the worldly religion of the Jew? Huckstery. What is his worldly God? Money. Money is the jealous God of Israel, in the face of which no other God may exist. Money degrades all gods of man, and turns them commodities. The bill of exchange is the real God of the Jew. His God is the only illusionary bill of exchange. The chemical nationality of the Jew is the nationality of the merchant, of the man, of money in general. Firstly, the farmers, the most stupid set of people in existence, who, clinging to the feudal prejudices, burst forth in masses, ready to die rather than cease to obey those whom they, their fathers or grandfathers, had called their masters, and submitted to be trampled on and horsewhipped by. Frederick Engels. I probably pronounced his last name, I'm not going to lie. But anyways, I will say, as I'm reading these quotes, this world has a lot of prejudices, a lot of bigotry. That's all I'm going to say so far as I'm reading this. Here we go. As for slavery, there is no need for me to speak of its bad aspects. The only thing requiring explanation is the good side of slavery. I do not mean indirect slavery, the slavery of the proletariat. I mean direct slavery, the slavery of the blacks in Suriname and in Brazil, in the southern regions of North America. Direct slavery is as much of a pivot which our present-day industrialism turns away as machinery, credit, etc. Slavery is therefore an economic category of paramount importance. Karl Marx, 1846. Every provisional political setup following a revolution requires a dictatorship, an energetic dictatorship at that. Karl Marx, 1848. Among all the nations and sub-nations of Austria, only three standard-bearers of progress took an active part in history and are still capable of life. The Germans, the Poles, the Magyars, hence they are now revolutionary. All the other large and small nationalities and peoples are destined to perish long before in the revolutionary holocaust, world storm. For that reason, they are now counter-revolutionary. These residual fragments of peoples always become fanatical standard bearers of a counter-revolution and remain so until their complete extirpation or loss of their national character. A general war will wipe out all this racial trash to their very names. The next world war will result in the disappearance of the face of not only the earth, from the face of the earth, not only of reactionary classes and dynasties, but also reactionary peoples. And that, too, is a step forward. Frederick, 1849. We discover that in the connection of these figures, the German national simpletons and money grubbers of the Frankfurt parliamentary swamp always counted as Germans, the Polish Jews as well, although the dirtiest of all races, neither in its jargon nor its by its descent, but most only through its lust for profit, could have any relation of kinship with Frankfurt. To the sentimental phrases about brotherhood, which are being offered here on behalf of the most counter-revolutionary nations of Europe, we reply that hatred of Russians still is the primary revolution passion among Germans. That sense of the revolution, hatred of Czechs and Croats, has been added, and that only the most determined use of terror against these Slavs people can we jointly, with Poles and Magyars, safeguard the revolution. Then there will be a struggle, an unrelenting life and death struggle against those Slavs who betray the revolution. An annihilating fight and most determined terrorism, not in the interest of Germany, but in the interest of the revolution. Frederick, 1849. We have no compassion. We seek no compassion from you when our time comes in. We shall make no excuses for the terror, Karl Marx to Frederick, 1849. The workers must try as much as ever possible to counteract all bourgeois... Oh my gosh, I'm losing my pronunciations. Bourgeoisie attempts at appeasement and compel the Democrats to carry out their present terrorist phases. They must act in such a manner that the revolutionary excitement does not collapse immediately after victory. On the contrary, they must maintain it as long as possible. From opposing so-called excuses such as sacrifices to popular revenge of hated individuals or public buildings to which hateful memories are attached, such deeds must not only be tolerated, but their direction. Their direction must be taken in hand, for example's sake. From the first moment of victory, we must no longer direct our distrust against the beaten reactionary enemy, but against our former allies, the Democratic forces. Against the party, who are now about to exploit the common victory for their own ends only, the army of the whole proletariat, with rifles, guns, and ammunition, should be carried out at once, and the workers must organize themselves into an independent guard, with their own chiefs and general staff, to put themselves under the order, not of the new government, but the revolutionary authority set up by the workers. Deconstruction of the influence of the bourgeoisie's democracy over the workers is the main point which the proletariat, and therefore also the League, has to keep an eye and after the upcoming upheaval, to be able to effectively oppose the petty bourgeoisie's democracy, in order that Democratic Party, whose betrayal of the workers will begin with the first hour of victory, should be frustrated in his nefarious work. It is necessary to organize an armed proletariat. Karl Marx, 1850, address to the Communist League. Removed and expelled members, like suspected individuals in general, are to be watched in the interest of the League, and prevented from doing harm. Intrigues such as individuals are at once to be reported to the community concerned. Rules written by Karl Marx and other Communist League, 1850. Alright. Thus we find every tyrant backed by a Jew, as every pope by a Jesuit. In truth, the cravings of oppressors would be hopeless, and the practicality of war out of the question, if we were not an army of Jesuits to smother thought in a handful of Jews to ransack pockets. The real work is done by the Jews, and can only be done by them, as they monopolize the machinery of the loan mongering mysteries by concentrating their energies upon the barter, trade, and securities. Here and there, and everywhere that a little capital courts investment, there is ever one of these little Jews ready to make a little suggestion or place a little bit of a loan. The smartest highwayman in a Bruzy is not better posted about the locale of the hard cash in a traveler's valise or pocket than those Jews about any loose capital in the hands of a trader. The language spoken smells strongly of Babel, and the perfume which otherwise pervades the place is by no means a choice kind. Thus, do these loans, which are a curse to the people, a ruin to the holders, and a danger to the governments, become a blessing to the houses of the children of Judah. This Jewish organization of loan mongers is as dangerous to the people as the aristocratic organization of landowners. The fortunes amassed by these loan mongers are immense, but the wrongs and sufferings thus entailed on the people and encouragement thus afforded to their oppressors still remain to be told. The fact that 1855 years ago, Christ drove the Jews' money changers out of the temple, and that the money changers of our age enlisted on the side of the tyranny happened again chiefly to be Jews, is perhaps no more than a historical coincidence. The loan mongering Jews of Europe do only on a larger and more obnoxious scale what many others do on a smaller and less significant. It is only because the Jews are so strong that it is timely and expedient to expose and stigmatization of their organization. Karl Marx, 1856. Now, I think I mentioned this earlier, but if I did, I'm going to remind you guys. The N-word in particular, This is the N-word that has the hard R. It's not the N-word that the African American community, the black community, uses with each other as a symbolism of befriendment. This is the hard R, the one that, for the most part, universally speaking, like, people do not use this word. This is extremely derogatory. So I'm just going to, when I say the N-word, you know what I'm talking about. Here we go. The Jewish N-word, Lasau, is not completely clear to me that he, as is proved by his cranial formation and his hair, descends from the Negroes from Egypt, assume that his mother or grandmother had no interbred with an N-word. Now, this union of Judaism and Germanism with a basic Negro substance must produce a peculiar product. The obstructiveness of this fellow is also N-word-like. Karl Marx to Frederick, 1862. I have arrived at the conviction that there is nothing to this theory, as for no other reason that because he is neither understands geology nor is capable of the most ordinary literary historical criticism. One can laugh once it's sick about his stories of the N-word, Santa Maria, and the transmutations of the whites into Negroes, especially that the traditions of the Senegal N-word deserve absolute credulity. C-R-E-D-U-L-I-T-Y. Just because the rascals cannot write. Perhaps the man will prove in the second volume how he explains the fact that the Winelanders have not long ago turned into idiots and N-words on their own deviation transition rocks. Or perhaps he will maintain that we are all real N-words. Friedrich to Karl Marx, 1866. Professional mass murder and zombie in the free time Lenin, if not for the sake of communism, it is necessary for us to destroy 9/10 of the people. We must not hesitate. I will chew out Willen with a few lines about his feebleness, for what is exactly the demise of the social democrat and all that LaSalle crap. Karl Marx to Frederick Engels. The French need a thrashing if the Prussians win. The centralization of the state power will be useful for the centralization of the German working class. The German predominance would also transfer the center of gravity of the workers' movement in Western Europe, from France to Germany, and one that is only to compare the movement in two countries from 1866 till now. See that the German working class is superior to the French both theoretically and organizationally. Their predominance over the French on the world stage would also mean the predominance of our theory over Proudhons, etc. Karl Marx to Frederick, 1870. Well then, to carry out the principles of socialism, do its believers advocate assassination and bloodshed? No great movement, Karl answered, has ever been inaugurated without bloodshed. From an interview with the Chicago Tribune, 1879. Being quality as an N-word, a degree nearer to the result of the animal kingdom than the rest of us, he is undoubtedly the most appropriate representative of that district. Letter from Frederick to Karl Marx's daughter. 1870. Crap, I did not get that in. But that is all the quotes. Is your mind disturbed yet? Again, I would highly advise to make sure you proofread this, or excuse me, proof this segment in particular. Make sure your kid is actually old enough to handle this kind of rhetoric, this twistedness here. And hopefully this is something that you've already explained to your kid as far as the concept of good and evil. But it's no wonder that our forefathers, foremothers, since really the 19th century or the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century, when communism started taking over Europe, that people in America have rebuked this adamantly. And some people say, you know, we're not communists, we're socialists. But if you know the point of socialism, the point of socialism is supposed to be a bridge into communism. So, anyways, what patterns did you notice between the most well-known Marxist regimes, and what are some differences you notice as well? Now, with that said, in this last segment, I'm going to close out the segment by doing a little dedication, just giving some facts about the people that have been affected as a result of these ideologies. So, with that said, we'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I'm your host, Ken Drew. And what a segment that last one was, wasn't it? Did give you some eerie feelings? To say that reading those quotes were hard is an understatement. But it was something that I had to do. And it definitely fits with the theme of the publication of Taboo Topic. You're not going to hear this in mainstream education anymore. Not in the Western world, anyway. And you're definitely not going to hear it in a communist regime. And every now and then, when I read those quotes, I would try to give an accent to add some, I guess, humor. But it doesn't make up for the evil being spewed out in these quotes. This episode, I want everyone to know that it was inspired by Cuba's protests again. Remind, that's what made me do this episode. I didn't have the interview that I wanted, and that's okay. But I wanted to channel that and still talk about this ideology. And with that said, I want to give my heart out when I say to the Cuban people, whether they're here in America or they're out there protesting, I am with you. If the U.S. allowed me, I'd be going down there protesting with you and giving my life. As a bonus, I'd probably smuggle some guns in too. Nothing is more symbolic to what you guys are doing, to what America fought against, than what you're doing right now. This episode is in dedication of the millions of Cubans who fled to the United States for the very freedoms that are being demanded on the little island today. The 11,000 that have died for disobeying the state in any regard, this is for you. To the hundreds and thousands of Cubans that have tried to get on boats since Fidel Castro took over, only to have sandbags dropped on you when they caught you, this is for you. To the 10 million people who died in the hands of Nazi Germany, 6 million Jews, this is for you. To the 20 million men, women, and children die in the hands of the Soviet Union, or what Russia is willing to admit, as they never condemned their leaders, neither has the Western world held them responsible in the same manner we did with Nazi Germany. This is for you. This is to the survivors, the ones who were orphaned, tortured, starved, sickened, slash diseased, trashed, enslaved. This is for you. To the ones who were experimented on as lab rats, and at times done so while still being awake. This is for you. And despite the Western world being hesitant to condemn China, to the 8 million people, including the Muslims being held in concentration and air quote re-education camps, this is for you. and to all the Marxist regimes that I didn't mention, who were unjustly imprisoned or killed as a result of having a different opinion of the state, or just being different based on your race. If you've ever been unjustly treated in a bigoted culture created by the state, and you were dehumanized, this is for you. My prayer is that my generation will wake up and respect what's been fought for already, and respect those who have actually experienced in a government, in a society where Marxism is prevalent, and listen to their perspectives on what it is. Because especially in America, we don't know what it really is. We've never experienced it, like, in full force. People are trying. We're not there yet. And I pray we'd never get there as well. And that we appreciate what we already have. Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States, where men were free. Ronald Reagan. I'll be back on Friday. Until then, God bless.